Over the Hills and a Great Way Off, 1988. My husband and I have known Barbara since 1968, when we and our children spent a sabbatical year in her son's house in Islington. At that time, she also lived in London. After her husband's death, she moved to the Berkshire village of Inkpen, where, on our next sabbatical, we often stayed with her and went with her on long walks on the Berkshire and Wiltshire Downs to Stonehenge, to the other great henge, Avebury, and to the Vale of the White Horse. Life in the lovely, lonely Inkpen house began to be difficult for a woman in her 70s, and so she moved recently to a sunny little house in Oxford. She is English granny to our 3 grown children, who have all been to stay with her. It was our turn. We went to England in September to see Barbara. England, too. London, of course. A land and a city we love to return to. But at the heart of it is the person, the dear friend, the wellspring. And we'd been promising for years to do Dorset and Somerset with her. What we didn't know was that much of that journey, all new country to us, would be for her a returning to the source. Chidock was where her family went summers for their seacoast holiday when she was a little child. She had climbed Golden Cap, the highest headland of England's south coast, exactly 50 years before, in 1937, with her young husband and her baby son. She had tramped the long dike paths of Dorchester's great Iron Age fort, Maiden Castle, with a granddaughter. She knew the roads and the byroads, and how to find hidden taller Fratrum and its tiny ancient barnyard church. For her, the journey was return, and therefore, for us, all its intensity of unknownness was doubled with a shared nostalgia, a familiar tenderness, which was again redoubled by the soft, rainy, breezy, gleaming weathers of autumn in the west of England, so like the autumn of our Oregon, so much farther west. I kept this journal while we drove, or before sleep, so that we might return again to these places, with Barbara, in words and memory, just as I took photographs along the way. Like photographs, a diary doesn't explain. It just reacts. But I don't think much needs explaining to those unfamiliar with the countryside, except perhaps the Cerne giant, in whose village we stayed 3 nights. He is a huge figure cut into the side of a steep hill. The hill is chalk covered with grass, so he is outlined white on green, and has been since the Dark Ages. He is, unmistakably and tremendously, a fertility symbol. And perhaps I should assure you that, though I am a fiction writer, I didn't make up a single one of the names of villages. You can find them all on a map, as I do sometimes, to remind myself that they are there, and that we were there, and might go back with Barbara. Friday, September 4. In the car. Barbara drives. Charles navigates. I stare and scribble. We left Oxford about noon and are now on the A34 south, coming into rolling uplands dotted with trees in their varying distances. Fields gray-green or stubble ochre. Sunlight and big sea clouds. A bare-armed boy in a black singlet herding calves by a haystack. His red-gold hair, white skin. The white is strange. Now heading towards Hungerford and Bristol, among brown and yellow ploughlands, paling into chalk streaks. Oaks and beeches, alone, or in rows and groves. A silvery quality to the green of this country, in this season. Now off the artery onto the quieter Hungerford Road, and through poor Hungerford haunted by the specters of the mass murder here last summer. The honest, familiar, curving street of shops where people want to buy cheese and letter paper and shoelaces, not to be slaughtered. Into Wiltshire on the high road, past Prosperous, past pretty Shelburne in its vale, shepherded by its small square grey church. A road follows a ridgetop, steep swaling off to the left and up again to another long ridge. And now we're on an even smaller road, down between hedgerows, up onto the open downs, a sheep biting its ankle. Great, long, pale Wiltshire distances. Down now, into little thatch-browed, whitewashed, bright-gardened Collingburn duchess, weeds sprouting from a long grey thatch. We discuss Barbara's friend Edmund's list of eligible wives, which did not include Barbara, she having crossed herself off before being asked, which annoyed Edmund considerably. We discuss the ugly way so many people dress themselves in London. Red poppies and black fighter planes and white chalk. We pass Stonehenge now, driving on the Amesbury Road, which I walked with my brother Carl in 1951. We had never been in England before. Everything was new. We were 24 and 21. We took the bus from Salisbury to Amesbury Village so that we could come to Stonehenge on foot, because it seemed the right way to come to Stonehenge, and it was. We walked and walked, talking Houseman and Barrow and Hardy, for we were very literary brats, and we kept seeing this little thing way off on a great downside, like a flock of sheep, maybe, or stumps of trees. Or more like stumps of teeth, really. Giant's teeth. A ring. Is that it? Is that them? And so I first came walking among them, among those great presences, in the bright morning. And then again with Charles in 54, the year we married. And other times, always walking out from Amesbury, so that we could see the sheep become the teeth, become the stones, so that we could walk back over the millennia. In 69, we walked it with the kids. The youngest was only 4 years old and never did approve of long hikes. He was bribed all the way out with the promise of a new matchbox car, a red one. He got it and played with it on the altar stone. Vroom, vroom. And then when we stayed with Barbara in 75, that Christmas, she took us over to Stonehenge on the evening of the winter solstice. If the Druids had been there, they were gone. Everyone was gone. There was a long golden winter light on the stones, a light frost, a great and ancient silence on the high downs. Barbara took photographs of that honey light, which seemed to shine out of the stones themselves. A couple of years after that, they put a steel fence around Stonehenge because too many people came and camped and trampled and chipped and trashed the stones. We said then we wouldn't go back. You learn to say goodbye to places, to keep them in your heart and go on, as we do now. Down and up again. A big, hard-bitten farm on the Warminster Road. A man in the field throwing lumps of fire to spread the field-burning blaze. A tank-crossing sign. Helicopters yammering. This is all military country. Down, 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 between high gold slopes where they're making hay, and into Chittern Village in its vale, and up, up, up again to sheep against the sky. And the land is growing lumpy. A long barrow, then a round barrow on a chalky ridge. The old bones showing through. Warminster, a gray stone and brick town. Rather linear and grim. We have stopped for lunch, and are sitting in a field in a tiny village farm just this side of Somerset. We sit on Barbara's mack and munch cheese, and a lonesome horse watches us from up the hill. We all pee in the hedgerow.
On again, into Froom, of the many splendored gardens, where a sign says, Fish and Chips and Chinese Food. Out of Froom, and the ridge running across the long green land that drops to either side,
intersected with dark hedgerows, dark trees. The green is vivid now, wet green. Heavy plant crossing. I imagine giant artichokes lumbering across the road. Beer garden and children's play area in Shepton Mallet, and then Canard's Grave Inn, a place for serious drinking. A sheep under a round green hill scratches its stomach with a hind hoof thoughtfully. And now we're at our bed and breakfast for tonight. West Home Farm in North Wootton, having been greeted by kids, cats, dogs, and made welcome. Barbara's room is a long way down the hall from ours, a shining floored narrow hall with windows and steps up and steps down and little angle turns. The farmhouse was built in fits and starts from the 15th to the 19th centuries. Turn a corner and you're Elizabethan. Our room has two low-set, deep-set square windows, one looking out on rough red-tile roofs, green-mossed, and a rainy green ridge beyond them. The other on young Frisians, Holsteins to Charles and me, some of the 100 head of cattle this farm runs, black and glossy white, grazing for windfalls among the apple trees of Avalon. For this is the Vale of Apples. This is Arthurian country, legendary land. When we first talked with Barbara about coming here, back a dozen years ago, we had been reading up on King Arthur, who and when he might have been in history, and where he might have gone in the Old West Country. By now, we've all forgotten all the facts we read, but not the legends. They are not forgettable. And Mallory, Tennyson, and White are with us here. Barbara finds her way from the Victorian era to the Elizabethan age to tell us that it's stopping raining and we can be off to Glastonbury. On the way, we get our first glimpse of Glastonbury Tor. Bare, abrupt, dark, topped with a broken tower, rising like an island over the rainy fields. An island it was, for all these farmlands were bog, marsh, and lake. The Iron Age town of Glastonbury was wealthy and famous, protected by water on all sides, an island within the greater island, England. So, to the rich Glastonbury of Roman times, St. Joseph of Arimathea came, so goes the tale, and climbed that other hill just above the town, Weary All Hill, and planted a hawthorn by the church he founded. The church grew, building and rebuilding itself over the centuries, like West Home Farm, till its fall and ruin when Henry VIII broke the power of the monks. But the descendant of St. Joseph's tree still flourishes and bears its tiny roses in the dead of winter at Christmas time. A faithful miracle, a not uncommon genetic oddity in hawthorns. So we walk the ruins of Glastonbury Abbey all the afternoon, wandering in sky-ceilinged chapels, through apple orchards, past the pond, seeking that holy thorn the whole time, and finally finding it right back where we started from. A venerable little patriarch of a tree, crouching by the wall near the entrance gate. Out to the farm, then, to wash and change, and back to the Methodist chapel-turned-house and workshop, where the potters, Liz Rayburn and Rod Lawrence, live, and entertain us with their beautiful 3-year-old son, Hayden, whiskey, dinner, good talk, and good pots. We discussed the Rajneeshis, a far cry from eastern Oregon. Drove back to the farm in the country night, and slept in pure silence, until the wind came up again and wuthered in a baritone organ tone around the house, and the rain came in great soft gusts. Saturday, September 5. I am sitting now on the curve of the staircase up to the chapter house of Wells Cathedral, the second most beautiful staircase in the world, surely, after the one in the Laurentian Library in Florence. The choir is practicing. Music rings along the high spaces defined by stone. Smell of stone. Gray stone, with a hint of rose beige. Little stone faces, high and low, look down out of the old centuries. We got very rained on, eating sandwiches at a deli across from the west face of Wells Cathedral, and hurried to find Packamacks in town. Mine is baby green, Charles's baby blue, women's XL size, made in China. Keep English rain off, very well. Then back through the Tors and Vales, once was swamp, to Pilton, and to the old vicarage, our new B&B. Our large room looks down upon the vicar's church, the spire on one corner of the square church tower, about level with the window. We walked the deep lanes of the village to high fields above it before dinner. It is a steep town, with a deep stream. There are some good monsters on the south church wall. A silky, bear-colored cat came in to visit and slept on my shirts in my suitcase. And fowls and a rabbit and two children wander and hop about the big back garden. But it is a vicar's cold house compared with last night's sweet, buttery, cidery farm. An enormous dinner at the apple tree on the Glastonbury Road. Sunday, September 6. Barbara's back, which has moods, was in a good mood, and we all wanted to be outside. So we went back to Glastonbury and walked up the Tor, starting from Chilkwell Street, where we left the car. A lovely windy walk. At the top, it came on to rain and blow, and dark rain mist ate up all the west and south of the immense countryside of green strip fields and dark green hedgerows and ridges and levels and red roofs and round tor sides. It stopped raining as we went down the other side, and we went to the Holy Well, or Chalice Well, which is only holy as all springs are. A lovely red iron water running into wading pools, healing pools, in delightful small gardens cut into the side of the tor under the high skyline. Lunch with Dora Rayburn, Liz's mother and Barbara's old friend, and her friend Anita, and Liz Rod and Hayden, in the house semi-attached to the chapel house. "Charles, Charles," Hayden cries, imperious. He likes Charles. He sits on Charles's lap, sucking his thumb, and dreamily fingers Charles's dewlap. When he sits on his grandmother's lap, he uses her earlobe the same way. In all these places, vast cats are to be seen, cats the size of small pumas. Monday, September 7. We set off from hilly Pilton in the mild rainy late morning along winding byways to Pyle. I am riding in the back seat of the car. Past Evercreech and onto the Fossway, long and Roman straight, which takes us down onto the Somerset levels, the lowlands low. Left past Cowes to Hornblotton among apples. Go in square zigs around every farm's flat fields across Kerry Moor to North Barrow, and then up and down and round about, Charles guiding us by the half-inch map, to North Cadbury, South Cadbury and its great Iron Age fort, past Pontsfoot, Sutton Montes, Queen Camel. We stopped to see St. Thomas a Becket Church, which seems to be frequented mostly by sheep, and then on, out of Somerset, into Dorset at last. Over a beacon hill, down big, deep hills, past dark woods, to Sherburne. A busy town with a confusing car park and a fine, steep high street. Everyone looked somewhat as if they had voted for Margaret Thatcher and were pleased at the result. Many Volvos. A pleasant woman popped out of an office to set us on the right way to Sherburne Abbey. We fortified ourselves with egg and cress sandwiches at a tea shop and then did the Abbey, which I found handsome but not endearing. Visited Barbara's publisher friend at Alpha Books, once we found it, then blundered around Robin Hood's barn back to the elusive car park. Round about again to find the Dorchester Road, and finally found it. Please take your litter home. Is this addressed to the vast cats? Cyril Tight, car breaker. For young cars that need a firm hand on the reins, I guess. In deep country, through thick beech and oak woods, over a hilltop, all twisty stone walls, to Upsern, which consists of a great house and its properties. A man in tweeds came stalking along the road with his stick and snubbed us as we stood looking at the view, which he referred to as my view. Later we found that the place is owned by a bunch of Austrian businessmen who come there only to shoot grouse or something, and he was a complete fake, which is nice. Then we drove on down, past Giant Hill, where we got a fine afternoon view of the giant, to Cerne Abbas. Our B&B is The Sound O' Water, named from a William Barnes poem, on Duck Street, by the little quiet running Cerne, in this bright, quiet hill village. Flint, brick, and stone in courses, half-timbering. The small church, mostly tower, has striped courses, and strange faces peer from corners all over it. A cool, bright evening. We found dinner, good place and good beer, at the Red Lion. Going to sleep, an owl crying, wailing, in the big woods of beech and oak that stand all round the streets. Tuesday, September 8. Waking in the morning to Tak-too-coos taffy. Tak-too-coos taffy. Tak. What do our western mourning doves say? It's not quite the same sentence, but I can't recall it, hearing this. I was up at 7 to bathe in the radiantly clean, moss-green and violet bathroom in the sunny, clear, cool September morning. A good English breakfast, and then back to the little church to photograph the stone faces in better light. Onto St. Austin's Well, a spring in old stone basins under huge lime trees, behind the church, below the graveyard. Then we followed the path up onto Giant Hill, misled at first by sheep trails, up by the fence, for the giant has to be fenced in like Stonehenge, because we are too many. Wonderful coombs and hillsides enlarging as we climb. On along the hilltop, past the fence, through thistly bits, to where you can walk freely about the tumuli and small earthworks of a village and field system of the Iron Age or earlier, and see all about the beautiful hills. Wancombe Hill and Rowden Hill, and down into the strange-shaped Yetcombe Bottom. Kiddle's Bottom, the map shows, is farther south. Then we come on back down the other side of the giant, and can see him a little, the chalk lines along the hill slopes. Back below him, through the beech and sycamore woods, into town.
We bought crackers and tomatoes and cheese and ribena and picnicked on Black Hill in a green field under a blue sky. On to Dorchester, to Maiden Castle, that great work of hands. We circumambulated it first by car, unintentionally, trying to find the way to it, then on foot, deliberately. Sun and wind, and the immense earthworks. 4,000 years. Sheep have been replaced by archaeologists, not an improvement. But you can still be quite alone, watching the hawk hunting. Back via the valley of the Piddle. We stopped for the church in Piddle Hinton. We passed the Piddle Valley Microwave Store in Piddle Trentide and came on across Kittle's Bottom, right up onto a high chalk ridge that took us straight to Cern Abbas, which now feels very much like home to the leg-weary who have walked so far back today in time. Wednesday, September 9. I woke this morning to a rather thin, middle-aged male voice in my mind saying the following poem. The Earthworks of Maidoon. Men hurry to hurt and kill. Great nations fall. Still, the hawk hangs still on the wind above the wall. It sounds very like Thomas Hardy, but not in top form. At breakfast, when we told Mr. Simmons, our kind host, where we were planning to go, he said, "And up along, down along day." And so it is, as I ride in the back of the car, to Taller Fratrum. This is a magical place. No more than a farm. A big farm, not even a village. But the farm has a chapel with a font carved in the Dark Ages. And the barn was where the brothers ate, the refectory. The beautiful farmhouse is early 17th century. The hills rise up all around in sun and silence. And on to Taller Porcorum, wonderfully named, with its staunch Dorset church standing, as the guide booklet points out, on 7 feet of buried villagers, the mound that raises church and churchyard above the village lanes. More excellent, open-mouthed gurgoyles staring down from the gray walls. Inside the church, numerous cruel-work pigs. And on, up along, down along, to wild, lonesome, hilly Powerstock, under a Stone Age fort, past and through dark oak forests, acorns for the Taller Porcorum pigs, wild boars for kings to hunt. Through a tunnel cut in sandstone and roofed with tree branches and vines, smelling earthy, rocky, dark, and then out and up onto the big hills again, past Pymore and past Dottery, to the sea. "Thalassa, thalassa," cries Barbara. We lunched on the beach of Chittick Sea Town, all ruddy, tawny flints and agates, and oddly some obsidian. And Barbara did Tai Chi down at the wave's edge. Then we made the ascent of Golden Cap, the high head that dominates that coast. Barbara had climbed it last in 1937, so it was a golden anniversary. We could see east past EYPE, pronounced Eep, to Portland Bill curving out grandly, and west, past Lyme Regis, to the far blue coasts. We went back up to Moore's Dorset Bakery, where Barbara used to buy Dorset knobs in 1912 or so. But the silly people only bake knobs in the winter now. So we settled for some butter cookies, cursing. Then back in the car, past Swire and Punnell,
through Little Briddy, red-thatched house in deep gloomy vale, huge stone H-shaped barn with a high slate roof and a stone-walled yard, crammed jammed full of lowing black-and-white cattle. Up again. The rivers run clear, clear. A clear stream runs through Sidling St. Nicholas. They are field-burning. The air dims. Home to sound a water, and a good whiskey, and a long wait for dinner at the Red Lion. The owls called again in the night. Two, and then three of them. A pure, quavering, falling cry and reply. Thursday, September 10. At breakfast, Doug Simmons sang for us his beautiful song of the old man that lived on Chesil Beach under a boat. He showed us his garden, lovely, half encircled by the little clear cern. Charles and I had been up at 7 to walk up to see the giant from the road once more, and back round by the cern to endearing Cern Abbas Church. By 11, I am writing in the car, in the green tunnel of trees that leads you out of Cern Abbas, up past Yetcombe Bottom. And now, the last long view right down Yetcombe to the village, and the square tower of the church, and the rooks wheeling and playing in the high air. On along up ridge and down dale, through Duntish, past Mappowder and Lidden Hoe, many farm trucks, lorries, I mean, very strong smelling of sweet muck. A village called King's Stag, among oaks, and a deer park, the spotted deer grazing easy among big wide-spaced oaks and horse chestnuts. Past Lidlinch on the River Lidden, and we have never yet found out what a lynch is. Sturminster Newton, a fine market town on a hill. The streams and sky all look like Constable today. A streak of silver aspens brightens the wind. Level green pastures for a while. Now we climb and climb steep slopes up to steep-streeted Shaftesbury, and so back into Wiltshire. Dorset, fare thee well. The hilly wooded lands open out wider and wider now, fewer hedgerows. After Noyle, we are in the wide-open, rolling, chalk-pale ploughlands of Wilts. Golden-fleeced sheep on the high hills. An army van. Caution, abnormal load. We go high-flying along an A road, vast, rolling, dun-gold, greeny-brown, pale plain all round, puffy, receding clouds above. Honey sunlight on hay rolls and sheep flocks. It's clouding up quite fast. We turn off to Avebury. What luck to see Avebury again. A picnic on the outer dike, and then a quick run around the great circles of the stones while Barbara rests in the car. Caught by pelting rain at the stones that I call the King and Queen at the end of the outer row, we huddled against the queen in our baby blue and baby green packamacks, and she sheltered us. We then refuged in the National Trust shop and bought a tea cozy sheep and a Kendall's mint cake, and came out to silvery running sunshine and cloud shadows, and photographed like mad. I sit now in the car in Marlborough High Street to write this, while Barbara and Charles grocery shop. Then up, up, up the Berkshire Downs, across the high, wide autumnal land, across the old Ridgeway, to the Downs end and overlook above the whole valley of the Thames, flat and full of business of mankind, all the way to the hazy horizon. Over the hills and a great way off, the wind will blow your topknot off. and so back to Oxford, to Barbara's house.